Good to see everyone this morning. We take our text from the passage that was read at the very beginning of the worship service, Mark chapter 13 and verses 33 through 37. Let me read it again, where Jesus says, "Take ye heed, watch and pray, for ye know not when the time is. It is when a man, sojourning in another country, having left his house and given authority to his servants, to each one his work, commanded also the porter to watch. Watch therefore, for ye know not when the Lord of the house cometh, whether at even or at midnight or at cock crowing or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch." Now, the word watch is used four times in this passage. There's two different Greek words that are used. In verse 33, there's a word that I will attempt to say for your amusement, agrupneo. Now, if that's not right, that's too bad. It's all Greek to me. But anyway, according to Vincent's word studies, the picture is one of in pursuit of sleep and therefore wakeful or restless. And so that's the idea, perhaps, in verse 33, "Take ye heed and watch and pray." In other words, be at least a little bit concerned about what's going to happen when Jesus comes so that you're aware of it when he does. Now, in verses 34 and 35 and 37, gregoreo, or that word there, is used. And according to Vincent, it's a different word, of course. The picture in this word is that of a man sleeping and rousing himself. In other words, waking himself up and getting up and getting going. While the other word conveys the idea of simple wakefulness, this adds the idea of alertness. Now, this is what Vincent says, and I think it's kind of funny in a way, but it wasn't funny to perhaps the people it happened to. In the temple, during the night, the captain of the temple made his rounds, and the guards had to rise at his approach and salute him in a particular manner. Any guard found asleep on duty was beaten, or his garments were set on fire. Now, that would be kind of an uncomfortable situation. I know that you realize that. In Revelation chapter 16 and verse 15, perhaps this is where this notion comes from, or where this idea in the verse comes from. Jesus says, "There, behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments." In other words, he doesn't get them caught on fire. "Lest he walk naked and they see his shame." And if you can imagine, here is a guard in the temple, goes to sleep, and his clothes have been caught on fire. How does he go home? He goes home in burning rags, or burnt rags. That is, if he survives the fire. And so everybody knows that he slept on the job. So we need to watch, because Jesus makes this comparison, at least with that, uses that word that makes suggests the comparison. We must all watch for certain things. And so that's what we want to talk about this morning. First of all, who is to watch? Who is he talking to? Well, you go back to Mark 13 and verse 37, and he says, "And what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch." He says to everybody, you need to be watchful. In Colossians chapter 4 and verse 2, Colossians chapter 4 and verse 2, the Apostle Paul says, "Continue steadfastly in prayer, watching therein with thanksgiving." Who's he talking to? He's talking about members of the church who should be watching for whatever they're supposed to be watching for. We'll get to that in just a second. But you look at Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 7. I've got verse 37. You're going to have a hard time finding that. But somebody will, with some imagination, might come up with something. But anyway, in verse 17, chapter 13, verse 17, it says, "Obey them that have the rule over you and submit to them, for they watch on behalf of your souls." Who's he talking about? He's talking about elders in the church watching on behalf of those who are in their charge. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 31, talking to the Ephesian elders, Paul says to them, "Wherefore watch ye, remembering that by the space of 3 years I ceased not to admonish everyone night and day with tears." I put a lot of work in here, and so have you. So be careful and watch what's going on. Then in Galatians chapter 6 and verses 1 and 2, we're told to do something that requires watching. It says, "Brethren, even if a man be overtaken in any trespass, ye who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, looking to thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." And implied in that is a watchfulness for the welfare of our neighbor. So who is supposed to watch? Well, we're all supposed to watch in the very various aspects in which we are to watch. Now, what are we to watch for? Well, we're to watch our words. Look at Matthew chapter 12 and verse 33 through 37. Matthew chapter 12 and beginning in verse 33, Jesus says there, "Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree corrupt and its fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by its fruit. Ye offspring of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh." So watch your mouth. "The good man out of his good treasure bringeth forth good things, and the evil man out of his evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. And I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." We need to watch our mouths, what we say, and how we say it. Now, there are certain things that are true, but we have to be careful even how we say that, because our purpose is going to be judged by God as well. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, Paul says, "Let no corrupt speech proceed out of your mouth, but such as is good for edifying, as the need may be, that it may give grace to them that hear." In other words, you're to speak in such a way so that people are drawn to you and to your faith and not repulsed by it. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verses 3 through 5, "But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as becometh saints, nor filthiness, nor foolish talking or jesting, which are not befitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know of a surety, that no fornicator, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God." So we need to be careful what we talk about and what we joke around about. And then James chapter 1 and verse 26, James says, "If any man thinketh himself to be religious while he bridleth not his tongue," he doesn't watch his mouth, he doesn't control his speech. While he bridles not his tongue, but deceiveth his heart, this man's religion is vain. That is, his faith in God is not worth anything. And so we need to watch what we say, and we need to watch the context in which we say it. Now, we need to watch our actions. What we do in this life is important, at least as far as the outcome of our life is concerned. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, Paul says, "For we must all be made manifest before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he hath done, whether it be good or bad. What you do is going to reflect upon you on the day of judgment and will be a determinant factor in where you spend eternity." So be careful of your actions, your words and your actions. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15, Ephesians 5 and verse 15, Paul says, "Look therefore carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise." King James Version says, "Walk circumspectly." That means watch where you put your foot when you walk. You don't want to step in something that is going to mess up your shoes. Well, spiritually speaking, you don't want to get involved in an activity that is going to be sinful, that might cost you your soul, make you guilty. So be careful what you do. Well, we need to watch also our thoughts. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 7 says, "For as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." How you think in your heart, what you do with your mind, how you exercise your mind, is reflected in your life. And we know that the issues of our life are going to be judged by God. Well, our thoughts are too. In Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8, it says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honorable, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things." Allow your mind to dwell on things that are positive and good and in harmony with God's will. But we don't always do that. And there's so much distraction in the world today to draw our minds and our hearts away from the good and cause them to dwell on the bad. So we need to watch our thoughts. Again, you look at Hebrews chapter 4 and verses 12 and 13, where it says, "For the word of God is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword and piercing even the dividing of soul and spirit of both joints and marrow and quick to discern the thoughts and intents of the heart." He's talking about the power of God in using His word as a measurement of judgment. And the implication is that He judges not only what we do, but the thoughts and intents of our heart. So it's very important that we watch our hearts. If our hearts condemn us, God is greater than our hearts. And He will condemn us also. Well, we need to watch the company that we associate with. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33, Paul says, "Be not deceived. Evil companionships corrupt good morals." And so many times we think that the opposite will be true. We'll associate with somebody and we'll be so good that they'll just naturally someday obey the gospel. Well, hopefully that's true. If you're consistent and you're faithful to God, that'll happen. But you must also be careful of the fact that most of the time that doesn't work. Most of the time, a little bit of the dirt that's on them rubs off onto you. And so you be careful of your associations. Now, in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11, in talking about ungodly behavior among members of the church or neighbors or friends, Paul says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather even reprove them." The children of this world would convince us that God is a loving God and that nobody's going to go to hell, nobody's going to be punished, that everything is okay, grace will cover whatever happens, or they'll try to convince you that there is no God that we have to answer to, but we are not of the darkness, but we're of the light. We're to walk as children in the light with the realization that God has set forth a standard and that there is a God to hold us to that standard. So have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Don't associate with people in their sin, but rather even reprove them. You know, they say that silence is consent. If you run with the sinner, you don't sin yourself, but you run with him and you don't say anything, then he gets approval from your silence and you bear some responsibility for that. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, and beginning with verse 14, Paul says, "Be not unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what fellowship have righteousness and iniquity, what communion hath light with darkness?" There's all kinds of applications that could be made of this statement. "Be not unequally yoked with unbelievers" would involve any relationship that might constitute a yoke. Well, what's a yoke? Well, you refer to oxen who are yoked together to pull a wagon or to plow a field. Don't be in a yoke or in an arrangement where you can't get away with somebody who doesn't believe what you believe. The most common application that you hear these days has to do with marriage. You know, if you marry somebody who is a child of the devil, then your life is not going to be pleasant if you're trying to be a Christian. And so you need to be careful who you marry. And I have recommended to young people I know, and they rarely ever take my advice on this. People marry whoever they just happen to bump into on the wrong night sometimes. And we tell them, marry a Christian. But I tell them, don't just marry somebody got wet. Wait till you're old enough and he or she is old enough so that you can see the issues of their life lived out in their life independent of their parents, making them go to church. Marry somebody who is an active Christian who is interested in spiritual things. Because if you don't, you don't know what's going to happen. When things get rough, sometimes those people get going and you never see them again. And, you know, you're left sitting there saying, well, good riddance, but no. So there is some good sense in applying this to marriage arrangement, of course. And there, of course, are times when people marry somebody outside the church, and later on, through their good and chaste behavior, they win over their spouse, which is great and wonderful. But women and children, women and men, if you marry somebody thinking you're going to change them, what usually happens first? You're the one who gets changed. You're the one who has to make the compromises. You're the one who has to give in. You can't change a man by marrying him. And you can't change a woman by marrying her. Oh, she might change some of her behaviors to please you, but her thoughts and her way of life and her philosophy of life don't change. But now, what about the unequal yoke of a business arrangement? What about the unequal yoke of a bad neighborhood? Now, you know, a lot of times people make a move and they never consider what they're moving into. I've lived in, as a young person and as an adult, I've lived in neighborhoods that were unworthy of my presence as a Christian. In other words, a lot of bad influence there. There are other, what about other yokes that we might enter into where we are influenced by those who are ungodly, or where we could be influenced, and it's a strong relationship. I have had very good friends that I've had to say goodbye to because they weren't a good influence on me. And you say, well, David, you're a preacher. That shouldn't happen to you. Well, I'm also a man, and those things happen to men. Sometimes you have to just say goodbye to your friends, and we don't have a whole lot in common. But anyway, be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. And we have pointed out many times the application that Paul makes is one that you might not think of. In fact, a lot of people are ignoring this application, in spite of the fact it is the one that Paul makes. They were in a church where there was a lot of error. And one of the predominant errors in that church was Judaism, accepting circumcision as a condition for Gentiles to be saved. You get this beginning in chapter 3, where he begins to talk about the difference between the old and the new law. And he concludes his talk about all these things when he says that we're not to be unequally yoked. But just before he says that, he says concerning their situation with these people who teach differently. Verse 11, our mouth is open unto you, O Corinthians. Our heart is enlarged. Ye are not straitened in us, but ye are straitened in your own affections. Be careful that your relationships with other people become so strong, other Christians even, become so strong that the weight of those relationships is far greater than the weight of your relationship with God. And there are a lot of people who have done that. With reference to religion, they just jump on whatever bandwagon happens to be passing by. They see somebody they recognize and like on it, they jump on. We begin to accept people into our midst who are ungodly, whose beliefs run contrary to what the Scriptures teach, pretty soon they're going to be exerting influence on us and on people that we love who are not able to yet to stand on their own. And this is what he's talking about. This is the application that Paul is making. He's not talking about marriage, even though the principle applies. He's not talking about business relationship, even though the principle applies. He's talking about relationships in the church where people do not believe and teach what God teaches. Now, there's another side to this coin. I think that's what conversely means. Okay, Hebrews chapter 10 and verses 24 and 25. The writer says, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, not forsaking our own assembling together as the custom of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day drawing nigh. We have a responsibility to be encouraging and uplifting to one another. And one of the few opportunities that we're guaranteed to have is the worship assemblies. So what do you tell people, your brothers and sisters in Christ, about your attitude toward God in the worship? Do you pay attention? Do you participate? Do you show up? The message is gotten loud and clear. Okay? Romans chapter 12, verses 9 and 10 goes beyond what the writer of Hebrews says. He says, let love be without hypocrisy. We say that we love one another. Do we really? And then he says, abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. In love of the brethren, be tenderly affectioned one to another, in honor, preferring one another. And yet I've seen people that wouldn't have any more to do with other members of the church than they could possibly get away with. There's no social interaction. There's no getting together. There's no discussion of life situations or things that, unless there's something serious, a serious problem comes up in the church among people, and then they have to discuss it. But we need to seek one another out for company and for social interaction. Why? Because I know that when Stan and I go out shooting, he's not going to have a case of beer with him. I've got some good friends who like to go out shooting, but I'm not going with them. Why? Because for them, it's an excuse to drink. There's others I won't go with because it's a place where they get away from their wives and tell stories that they ought not to tell in front of the women and children. They just don't know. I'm still a child. I don't want to be hearing that stuff. Okay? So we need to seek. We don't have to worry about that among one another, see? We don't have to worry about stopping in the Circle K for lottery tickets and that kind of thing. Because we know what we stand for. And we can associate together. We can go to ball games together. And we can do things together and be a strength and encouragement to one another. So we need to seek one another out for those things. Somebody says, well, we don't have anything in common. Well, you just haven't seen Stan shoot. Or some, you know, I don't play golf. I know that would be a big social advantage with me and maybe other preachers. But I don't think that's what he's talking about when he says, be tenderly affectionate to one another in honor, preferring one another. In other words, all you preachers need to stick together. That's not what he's talking about. And I've got a lot in common with members of the congregation here, and I hope they have a lot in common with me, that we can enjoy one another's company. But we ought to prefer one another in the sense that, you know, it's not a constant battle to explain to people why you don't want that beer or why you don't want to hear that story again or why whatever. Well, we need to watch our habits, both good and bad. And we'll start with the good habits. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 17 says that we are to pray without ceasing. Hebrews chapter 10, we read a while ago where it says that we're not to forsake our own assembling together as the custom of some is. You know, if you do something enough on a regular basis and often enough, it becomes habitual. It becomes second nature to us. And just to give you an example, I don't recall any time when I was growing up or even as an adult where I ever questioned going to church on Sunday morning, even going to Bible class. Why? Because I did it all the time. It was just something that I did. And somebody shows up on Sunday morning and wants to visit. Well, they know I'm going to church, and I'm going to go to church whether they show up and come to visit or not. In fact, I'll say, why don't you come with me, and afterwards we can visit. And if they don't want to do that, that's okay with me. That they don't have to, but I'm going to church. And I like to brag about my son telling the Little League coach, without my prompting or hinting around, at 7 o'clock, I'm getting in the car, and we're going to church, even if it's Wednesday night, and the score is tied at the bottom of the ninth. I think they just played 7 innings. But anyway, you know what I mean. He's going to go to church. He didn't have to wonder about it. He didn't have to worry about it. Okay? Hoyt Houchin. We all of us know Brandon. His grandfather, Hoyt, was a good preacher. And he became afflicted with Alzheimer's. He was pretty seriously involved in Alzheimer's before he died. He had just really lost touch with reality. And every Sunday morning, he would get up, take a shower, shave, get dressed in his Sunday best, and he'd go sit at his desk with the light turned on, and he'd have a blank sheet of paper in front of him, and somebody would ask him what he was doing, and he would say, I'm getting ready to preach. This is Sunday. Well, he wasn't going to preach, but he had that so deeply ingrained that even Alzheimer's did not erase it. Okay, it was that much ingrained with him. So that's a habit. That's something, a good habit. Not one that we just fall into, but the one that we consciously ought to be practicing. In Acts chapter 10, I know the outlines might say give a different chapter, but it's chapter 10 and verse 38. It talks about Jesus and a habit he had. It says, even Jesus of Nazareth, how God anointed him with the Holy Spirit and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. Now, we can't work miracles, and we can't cast out demons, but we can go about doing good. We can make that a habit, make it a practice to do good, like Jesus did. And then 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 1, Paul says, be ye therefore imitators of me, even as I also am of Christ. That we do that habitually. We just do it by second nature. We consciously do it until it becomes ingrained in us. But we avoid bad habits. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 22, we're told to abstain from every form of evil. The King James Version says, abstain from every all appearance of evil, which is a little bit more accurate. Anything that even looks bad, we stay away from it. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12, 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12, Paul says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. You know, we know people who have been brought under the power of bad habits. A little wine with supper. Or I think one of the things that the entertainment industry tried to get us to do, because you see it in all the 1950s and 60s television shows, somebody comes in from work, and where do they go? They go straight to the liquor cabinet, and they pour a little whiskey or whatever it is for an afternoon, and then at dinner they have their wine, and a little bit later they have something before they go to bed. I don't know what they have before they go to bed, but they have it. It's almost habitual. Are you under the power of tobacco? Have you been brought under the power of that bad habit? How about marijuana? Now, marijuana, it seems to be a very popular drug these days, and people say, well, it's no worse than alcohol. Well, I've got news for you. If you're going to drink alcohol, I don't want to be around you. And I've had people who were under the influence of marijuana. I've had two individuals stay at my house for a certain amount of time under the influence of marijuana. Were they smoking marijuana while they were in my house? I couldn't smell it on them, but they had a very recent history of it, and you couldn't trust them for anything. Not that they were dishonest. They didn't know what they were going to do the next 10 minutes. Extremely unstable. You know, sometimes you just shake your head and wonder, what in the world? Why in the world? Now, don't be counting back on your fingers and trying to figure out who I'm talking about, because you could do that if you wanted to. But one of them, only some of you could figure out who it was. But not only does marijuana grab a hold of you, it's very extremely addictive, but it makes a liar out of you. People who smoke marijuana have no conscience about lying, and they do it all the time. Everyone I've ever known, unless they're just free and open with it, lies about it. Lies about its good effect, lies to minimize the bad effect, and lies about doing it. And yet, the push is, in our society today, for everybody to start smoking marijuana, it's not any worse than tobacco, they say. It's not any worse than alcohol. Well, alcohol is bad enough. That's a poor comparison to make. And tobacco is bad enough with its habit and the destruction of the flesh that also is a poor comparison to make. Just be careful that you don't get involved in a habit that gains power over you, that controls you, where you become a servant of the desires of the flesh, because that's where sin rules. Romans chapter 6 and verse 12. We know that passage. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verses 1 through 4, Peter talks about such things. Well, in verses 3 and 4, where he says, for the time past may suffice to have wrought the desire of the Gentiles and to have walked in lasciviousness, lust, wine-bibbings, revelings, and carousings. Wine-bibbings, revelings, and carousings are different words that describe different levels of inebriation or drinking. Stay away from it. Well, when you stay away from it, what are your friends going to think? You know, most of us, I don't think any of us have this problem. But most people who drink just casually, socially, when they decide that they're not going to drink anymore, it's a horrible habit to break, even if you're not a drunk. Okay? Everybody just don't deny it. Everybody knows that. I don't drink, and I know that. How do I know it? Because I've had enough sloshed on me. Okay? And I'm not just talking about the liquid. I'm talking about the trouble that people are put out to when the friends drink. But I've also seen somebody who just drink moderately and said, you know, I think I'm just not going to drink anymore. And all their friends who drink descend on them as though they had done the worst thing that they could ever have done. What do you mean you're not going to drink anymore? What's the matter with you? There's nothing wrong with just taking a drink or two, and just on and on and on until they give up their resolve. Well, that's what Peter is addressing here in 1 Peter 4, and he says in verse 4, wherein they think it strange that you run not with them in the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. You become a pariah. Why? Because you're stopping the habit judges them. You don't, if you don't see that, they do. They get it, and they don't like it. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 31. Now there are some exceptions to that, but the exceptions are the exceptions. They're not the rule. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 31, it says, whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Make sure that whatever habit you might have is not going to be a distraction to others from your godliness. I remember a gospel preacher one time talking about just smoking. And he was talking about how he smoked. And he was teaching a Bible class one time, and as he taught the Bible class, the urge got him, and he found himself going like this through the Bible class. And the person he was teaching didn't know very well. And they looked at him kind of funny, and they said, well, how long has it been since you quit smoking? And you know what he had to tell them? He said, about half an hour. He says, I still smoke. And they looked at him kind of funny, and they said, well, we wouldn't have thought that. And you know what he did? He had packed cigarettes in his shirt pocket, put them on the table, and never picked them up again. You know why? Because here was somebody in the world who saw the inconsistency. And we can't. Can you imagine admitting to somebody you're trying to teach the Bible you smoke marijuana? Or that you drink, you never get drunk, but there's times when you worry about driving. I've been with people who did that. And it sure makes an impression, but not the one that they want to make. So we need to watch these things. Now, how do we watch them? Well, Colossians chapter 4 and verse 2 says, this, it says, continued steadfastly in prayer, watching therein with thanksgiving. We watch with thanksgiving, thankful to God for all the things that He's given us, and it makes us more aware. In Ephesians 6, verses 17 and 18, it says, take the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, with all prayer and supplication, praying at all seasons in the Spirit, and watching thereunto, in all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. We're to watch in all perseverance. There are going to be things while we're watching that happen we don't like, make us uncomfortable, that seek to move us from our course, but we need to persevere. Why? Well, First of all, we don't know when the Lord is going to come again. We look at the book of Luke in chapter 12. Luke chapter 12 and verse 37. It says, "Blessed are they, are those servants whom when the Lord cometh shall find watch." excuse me, it's the time of that year. "Blessed are those servants whom the Lord when he cometh shall find watching." And then in verse 40 he says, "Be also ready for an hour that you think not the Son of Man cometh." When you're not ready, when you're not thinking. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, Paul says in verse 2, "For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord cometh as a thief in the night, when they are saying peace and safety, and sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall in no wise escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness that the day of the Lord, the day should overtake you as a thief." I'm very comfortable in telling you right now that I don't believe the Lord is coming today. But you know what? If he did, and he might, I'd be happy. Wouldn't you? Now, if I say I'm very comfortable in telling you that I don't think the Lord is coming today, I have to tell you, I don't know. How would I know? I don't. But if he comes, I'm going to be ready. And he might. So you better be ready too. And that's the point. It's kind of like he says, as travail upon a woman with a child, a woman who is pregnant is going to have that baby one way or the other. And our wishing it away does not stop the Lord from coming. And we need to watch because of the enemy. Be sober, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. And according to Mark chapter 14, Mark chapter 14 and verse 38, this is what Jesus told the disciples when he found them sleeping. "Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." We need to watch because of temptation. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is something we all need to understand. We all want to. I have confidence. Everybody here wants to do what's right. We want to do what's right, don't we? Then why don't we always do what's right? Because the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Sometimes the flesh is not as strong against sin as our minds are. And so we need to be watchful concerning temptation. Well, when do we watch? When should we watch? Well, we go back to Mark 13 and verse 37. "And what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch." We need to watch now. Matthew 24 and verse 42. Matthew 24 and verse 42. "Watch therefore, for ye know not on what day your Lord cometh." Verse 44. "Therefore be ye also ready, for in an hour which ye think not, the Son of Man cometh." And then in chapter 25, verse 13, "Watch therefore, for ye know not the day nor the hour." We have so many warnings that we ought to be ready all the time. And there's no excuse for not being ready. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 18 again, "With all prayer and supplication, praying at all seasons in the Spirit, and watching thereunto in all perseverance." All seasons, all the time, we need to be ready. Because we don't know when that day is going to come. But we do know this, that we must persevere. We must endure. In Mark 13 and verse 13, Jesus says, now I've got the wrong verse there. But no, I don't. I'll persevere this embarrassment. "And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endureth to the end, the same shall be saved." He that endures to the end. We've got to endure to the end. Just becoming a Christian is half the trick. The other half is continuing and persevering. We must, as Paul says in Ephesians 5, verse 15, walk circumspectly, or be careful how we walk, where we put our feet when we walk. And in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 17, Peter says, "And if you call on him as Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to each man's work, pass the time of your sojourning in fear? That is simply a call not to be afraid, but to be careful. And sometimes we just are not careful enough. Well, we ask the question, are you ready? I look across the audience, I see everybody here has been baptized. Mark 16:16 says, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. But as we are baptized, we all understand, I know that we all have an understanding, that that is an agreement with God to continue living the way that God wants us to live. A disciple is one who continues in His Word. Are you continuing in His Word? Is there something in your life that you need to take care of? Is there something in your life that you need to watch more closely? Will you think about those things? And if you're subject to the invitation, please come to the front while we stand and sing.
Great day coming, a great day.